You're listening to Christina's Room podcast, a place where startup founders, entrepreneurs, and executives can find inspiration from me and other founders to grow awesome businesses and fulfill their dreams. My name's Christina Imre, and I coach VC-backed startup founders and mission-oriented leaders thrive in business and life. Welcome, welcome to Christina's Room Business Podcast. I am very, very happy to welcome today Daryl Evans, who I found we share a lot of commonalities. And I'm so happy to have this podcast because I am sure that there are many important messages we both can share. And coming from Daryl, it will be easier because I just have a hunch that he will share many of my views and some main aspects that I often pinpoint. Welcome to the show, Daryl.
Thank you, Christina. Thanks for having me.
So I will start listing a couple of commonalities. You're a serial entrepreneur. You founded or co-founded 6 companies before, like myself, and also you are an investor. We will talk a little bit about how active you are because this investment space is a little bit very diverse. And also you're a podcaster, I believe a little bit more active than myself. You have the Mindshift podcast. I invite everyone to listen because I noticed you have very, very interesting elements. And I love your quotes. You have very clever quotes there. I would love you to tell a couple of them, especially relating to employees. And of course, you are the owner and the CEO of Yokel Local Internet Marketing. And I would love you to spell the name just for my listeners to be sure they got it right.
Yeah, it's Yokellocal and .com is how you find it. The full name of the company is Yokel Local Internet Marketing. But obviously, when we started, we had a long name and we're like, that's too long to be saying every time we introduce the company.
Awesome. Thank you. Except the fact that you have a very podcast friendly voice, I believe we'll have a great chat here. I'm curious, you're welcome. What is your favorite topic? Because you're doing so many podcasts and I'm sure that some of the topics, maybe they are just off for you. Not so much an excitement. What would be your main favorite topic today?
You know, I love talking about the distinction and the mindset, or if you would see it in the name of my podcast, I love talking about the shifts and the discoveries that we have to make, not just as entrepreneurs, as you and I are, not just as leaders, as many of your listeners are, but even in our walk as parents and friends and family members and through different aspects of our life. I love to break down the aspect of how do you go from inspiration to realization? And of course, life is funny sometimes and it knocks us down and we have stumbling blocks, hurdles, failures. I posted about this morning on my social media. How do we go though from those breakdowns to breakthroughs in our life? And that's been a passion of mine now for 32 years, even though I just started the podcast a few years ago. But it's been sort of the theme and the fabric of how I live my life and business as a parent and just how I see every one of us have to figure out those two journeys in life.
Yeah, this is another thing we share because I started my journey to uncover human nature and focused on mindset while I was a teenager. And it was fascinating to me that how we can be triggered from one second to another to just transform ourselves, our mood. And at one point, you are just so friendly, nice, loving, and that the next second you transform yourself in a demon. And so I said, hey, we are a little bit too shallow. Maybe we are not exactly in control in our lives and we could do much better than that. And that started, you know, my discovery in this space, because except entrepreneurship, we also share keynote speaking gigs. You're also a speaker, you're a trainer, you're a coach. And I went all of this through journey also to discover how we can do better in a business environment, because as a born entrepreneur, I had this in myself, but also the curiosity to uncover human nature. So here, I believe that we could discuss a whole week, how you see things, how I see things, and just find common themes. So what I've noticed about your work and where you are passionate about is that you truly identify the aspect of uniqueness in individuals. And when you work with people and you hire employees, you should always aim their passion, their natural gifts, not just a task-oriented job fulfilling those tasks. And so I would love you to develop a little bit this part and what you've noticed on the field in companies who focus on the first and companies that focus on the second.
Yeah, it's a great discovery for me over the years. To put a little context, I got started in management even before I was an entrepreneur. I was working for a fast food restaurant while I was in college. And so my first management role, where I was responsible for hiring, training, developing, coordinating the operations of a restaurant, I'm 20 years old. And most of the people, half the people in the company were older than me in my restaurant.
You
So
can
my,
name it. It's Taco Bell, and
oh, yeah,
it's good to know
it is.
that.
Yeah, it's Taco Bell. Yeah, it's Taco Bell. Everybody in America knows this, the college friend's favorite. In fact, I still can go through a drive-through and feed my family of seven for under $30. You can't do it anywhere else on the planet, I don't think. But so to put some context behind it, I got an early opportunity in leadership, and it taught me a lot after I failed for about 3 years, because I worked there all through college. And when I say failed, it's sort of material, but it wasn't failure. It was just I learned a lot of what I didn't know. And as I moved into entrepreneurial ventures full time after college, and more specifically around 2000, what I realized, especially for small businesses, is oftentimes as entrepreneurs and founders, we get overworked and we are overwhelmed by all of the details and the things that have to happen in the business. And a lot of times we feel trapped in the fact that the business is smaller and we are the ones responsible, and it's our vision and it's our dream. And we tell ourselves a little bit of a lie, and that is that no one can do it as good as me, or no one will be willing to commit the time to figure it out like I would because it's my business. And what I learned was that was really bad thinking around 2003 and four when I had a coach. And, you know, I was doing well with the business at the time, not the current business I have now. I was early in that stage. And they just taught me about the power of unique personality and unique behavior. And more specifically, a term that I use, it's kind of my own phrase, the definite natural ability of every one of us on this planet, whether that's a learned behavior, and more importantly, what's instinctual to our nature. It's funny you mentioned human nature. So I was introduced to the Kolbe A Index, which is founded by Kathy Kolbe, Dr. Kathy Kolbe. And it's like many different types of assessments that you've probably heard of and your listeners have heard of. But where it differs, when I say assessments, Myers-Briggs, DISC, StrengthFinders, where Kathy Kolbe's program differs is it's measuring what someone is most likely to do in a given situation. The way I made that distinction was I am naturally going to be okay in a sales environment, in a networking environment. It doesn't mean that I will just pick up the mic and have no fear, but I'm okay with that. But if I was to have someone who instinctually was not wired for that specific task or job description, what we often do as entrepreneurs is we hire people to do the thing we don't want to do, and we just ship it off to them and wonder why they fail, even though we wrote out the job description, even though we told them how to do it. And that was one of my first discoveries when I had a couple team members that I hired back then that in my knowledge then didn't perform the job up to task, until I got some coaching that said, oh, no. You gave them the wrong job. I'm like, well, that was a job I needed done. So that became the path. That became the path of discovery. So my philosophy now, and has been now for about 15 years, is whenever we have the job that needs to be done, we outline that clearly, and we understand what the goal and expectation of the role is. But then what we do is we're very clear about who, what is the natural inclination of the type of person who would enjoy this job. And the way I say it, and if you've heard some of my videos or if you read it, is I look for someone's unique skill set whereby when they show up to work, they are operating in their gift such that their gift aligns with our strategic vision and our strategic goal. And so we're very clear about how to do that. And we don't get it right all the time. And it isn't that we don't train from the bottom up. So we're not always looking for experts. And so the distinction, though, is are we clear about the unique gifts and talents of this role? And are we looking for a person who has that? And we can do that through our first couple of interview processes. Christina, I actually took some heat on social media one day. Heat is relative, but some people got mad at me when I posted a video about this because I said our interview process at our company is three interviews. And some people were like, that's a waste of company resources. Like, if you can't figure out if they're good enough for the job in the first or second interview, you're wasting company resources. You're not being a good steward of the company's money. And I'm like, it's okay for you to feel that way. I don't agree with it. So we're not going to edit our process. It's worked well for us for now two different companies, 17, 18 years. And it's what I believe in. And I don't believe that you should expect today that someone's going to show up and be passionate about what you want. They're going to show up and be passionate about what they want. So if you can align what they want and then make it align with what you want by way of how that assists the process, your team will stay for a while. They'll work harder than you ever imagined because they're not doing something they hate for a paycheck. They're doing something they love. And that's the distinction. Key is, can we get that right more of the time before they come into the company than we do wrong after they're already in?
This is so interesting. I knew it that we have and share common themes and aspects about how we should consider employment. And you know, for many companies I work with, also as a fractional executive and also on my own, I created lists. So every time I identified that kind of talent you're talking about, or gift or passion in some direction, and I love the person, but I didn't have a job for that person, I put it on a list that once I have a proper job for my future company, or later in the game, or for a client, I will have that person and I will bring it to that perfect role. So this was one of the things I constantly did. And it's also important for the size of the company, you know, because you're mentioning also at the beginning, we are doing all those roles and we are too micromanagers, maybe as entrepreneurs, because we believe, especially at the beginning with your first startup, maybe the second as well, that no one will do it better. And so you micromanage at that stage, maybe you are not exactly too focused on the gift of others. But once you're growing and you identify someone, I always say fire or hire the perfect person you see the advantages or the gift and just create a role for that person. Don't lose it. Even if you find it at a coffee shop or somewhere and you just love that person and how it presents and you believe that it connects with the culture or something, just find a role for that person and
That's right.
hire it.
Christina, you couldn't have said it any better. I mean, you and I definitely share this common theme. And it's funny because in my agency, this last 12 years, I have had interviews with individuals who I was like, you would be amazing in this company, except not for this role. And I have probably hired a half a dozen. I just did it in September. Someone applied in April for an open position. And I had a conversation and I'm like, you know, I just don't think this is the right role, but I think you'd be a great fit here. My original creative director, she came into an interview in 2015. And I was just like, you're just not ready for this role because it was more of a senior level role. And she was just a year or two out of college. And not that a year out of two out of college wasn't right for it, but there wasn't enough experience background with the rest of the candidates. But I'm like, but I'd like to have you work here. Can I reach back out in a couple of months? Because I think there's something coming. And so that also is part of that, right? It's when you find someone and you have to have the discretion to recognize that though they're good, this isn't the right role. And then you have to be willing to say that to the candidate. And I think the candidates that I've said it to have appreciated it. And I just hired in December a gentleman named Jose. He's from Chile. And he came through an interview series at the beginning of the year. And it was him, in fact, who was reaching back out to me to say, hey, has anything changed? Is there anything opened up? He was a little bit less experienced than we needed for that specific opening. And by the way, I'm sure you're like me as well. I don't ever just try to hire experts. I want people to grow. I hire people that are willing to learn and grow. I'm a growth-oriented guy. I'm a constant and never-ending improvement mindset person. I feel like if you're going to be great at what you do, you're going to always be getting better. So we're an environment where mistakes are expected.
Encouraged.
Yeah, they're encouraged.
Yeah.
Like, take action, fall down. Don't wait for someone to give you approval. Do it if it's the right thing to do. If it doesn't work right, guess what? Chances are you're not going to bankrupt the company, or you right? We can learn from it and grow, but don't wait 8 hours for someone to give you dot your I and cross your T on your idea executed based on the way you've been trained. So I do share. I can't tell you how many times I've passed on an interview, and I've said to them, I would really love to have you here, but I don't think this is the right role. And if it's okay, can I reach back out when an opportunity presents itself? And I'm pretty sure, if not a half dozen, it could be up to seven or eight that have happened where we brought them back in later. So, and I think that's important when it comes to recruiting as a founder, right? When you grow a business, it's not always great doing 50 interviews to find a brand new person. Build relationships, have a pool of people that are talented, and who knows where they're going to be the next time you have an opening. So it's
Yeah.
the way I've always thought about it.
Many times, entrepreneurs and also bigger companies who don't leverage human nature and how we actually function and what's important for us, even if they know it instinctively, they just don't use it. Like all the time, if you find the right type of person whose vision, long-term vision, including the personal one, aligns with the company vision, then you solve the problem from the beginning. You solve procrastination, motivation issues, and that person will work if you manage to connect the two. And if you know that
100%.
person personally, this is a theme I constantly promote. Know your people personally, because once you can help them and enable them to conquer their world, their wishes in life, and you connect it with the company's vision, you have them. And they will outperform another group of 10x people at a huge company. And as a startupper, this is very important for you financially, budget-wise. And because you basically, with a team of 10 people, you can outperform another company with 100 people who are not matching their roles, like you said.
That's right. That's right.
So, how would you define the importance of matching people per culture and matching their personal skills also and inclinations?
It's a great question. I just shared this with yesterday. Today's the beginning of this. We're right here at the beginning of the year at the time of recording this. So I had a little short kickoff call for the first of the year since we were closed Monday. And I revealed something that no one really knows in our company. And I share it with other leadership groups, but most people on the team don't realize that the very first interview that we do in the company is a culture interview. It has nothing to do with their skills. It has nothing to do with their resume got them to the interview, their background and their experience, what we saw got them to the first interview. But the first five questions that we ask in the interview have nothing to do with the job, has nothing to do with the direction of the company. There are five questions that I've asked for a long period of time. And ultimately, there's one question in the back of my mind that I'm trying to answer at the end of the first interview. And here it is. If I invited them to my house this Saturday for a barbecue with my friends and family, my grandkids and neighbors, would I feel safe?
Oh, I love this. Oh, awesome.
So they don't know that
Yeah.
that's the answer to the question. If you fail that test with me, I don't care what your background is. I don't care what your pedigree is. Now, what am I really listening for? I'm listening for someone who's humble. I'm listening for someone who's growth-minded. I'm listening for someone who's self-aware of their own faults. We have five questions that we are trying to base this, I'm trying to base this decision on. One of them has to do with, are they growth-minded? Because we're in the world of digital marketing. Digital marketing changes daily sometimes, and it's frustrating. And it's challenging, and there's ebbs and flows. if you're looking for a monotone, set it and forget it job, don't get in digital marketing. That's what I would tell you to do. So I have to know if you're growth minded and if you're adaptable to change on a regular basis. That's one. Number two, I'm looking for whether or not you have a vision for your personal future. Like, I don't care what you want to do for my company. I want to know what it is that you want. If you have no personal goals, if you can't tell me in 3 years what success looks like for you, and I'm not talking, I don't want to hear, oh, we want to help your company become an Inc. 5000. No, don't tell me that. That's bull. Pardon my French, Ellis. You know, that's bull. You didn't wake up this morning coming to make my world successful. What are your personal goals? So the third one has to do with self-awareness around their strengths. And I don't ask them, what are your strengths? And I don't ask, what are your weaknesses? I ask the question kind of this way. I say, tell me about a time when you were praised for, I forget the exact question, Christina, right now, because I'm not doing an interview, but I'm basically trying to outline whether they can see themselves as a success story, right? Some people have great careers, but they don't ever believe that they were the reason for the success. And I'm looking for outliers in my world because our world is not black and white. Digital marketing and all the platforms, we don't own none of the platforms, but our clients trust us to get them results on platforms we don't own. I need outliers who can think and read between the lines. It's not just follow the blueprint, get the results. It's just not the way it works. The third question, fourth question has to do with their weaknesses, but I ask them this question and people get all shocked when I ask it because I ask it this way. And I say, what are three things you absolutely suck at? And then they go, I've never been asked that question. Well, of course not. You have never been asked that question because no one, I made it up. But what I asked that question, the reason I asked that is I'm wanting to see if they're self-aware and if they're willing to tell me. See, a lot of people get in interviews and they just pop off all of these skills to try to make it sound good so they get the job because they think if they're honest, they're going to get passed by. No. I want to know if you're self-aware at what you need to get better at in this role or anywhere else. So that's one of them. And then the fifth question, I'm sorry, I'm doing this impromptu, but I kind of forget the fifth question. But the goal of those questions is, would I feel comfortable inviting them to the barbecue this weekend? I don't have a barbecue every weekend, but it's metaphoric in my head. Do I feel comfortable inviting this person? So that's how I assess culture in the first interview. If you don't match culture, I don't care what your skills are. And culture to me is what I make it to be, right? In my mind, are these people good humans for the rest of the group that we're trying to build? And that's sort of my weird way of assessing it. And I've been doing it now for about 8 years that way specifically. And I can say I've never hired a bad human. I've hired some people that didn't work out skill-wise, but I've never hired a bad human who came in and destroyed our business or destroyed our workflow or culture or became a nuisance to another employee or got into a fight with another. No. None of that.
I really love that you're giving practical examples. Thank you for that, sharing your interview questions. And these are very, very precious. So those who are listening or watching the YouTube version, please, please, please apply them because are just they can transform you into a winner, basically. And my question here would be because you mentioned that weekend question is about safety. And then you said comfortable. So which one is important and one, why safe? Why is
Both.
this word both?
Both,
Okay.
because it's all about trust. It's all about trust.
Okay.
I have a
Okay.
100% virtual company now. I have to trust that when I have to trust that when you're across the world, across, I mean, I've got people, fortunately, I've had people on almost every continent at this point since we went virtual. And that has been one of the biggest challenges, Christina, to me growing this business where we are right now, is when the pandemic hit, we did have freelancers and outsourcers that were on different parts of the continent or the world. But we had a local office with 12 people in it. And then we had our system built around that. Well, when we hit the pandemic, all of a sudden had to manage a business virtually. And today, as we speak right now, I only have one team member in my city.
Right.
And
I was.
so for me, it's about trust. It's about comfortability, safety, trust, a bit of integrity. Right? Because if you can't tell me the truth about what you're not good at, I'm struggling to wonder if you're going to raise your hand when you're struggling on that assignment or on that project. And I need you to raise your hand when you're struggling on the project. Because if you don't raise your hand, you're going to try to figure it out. And I don't mean, I will never put this person's name on air. There was a gentleman, he's from Korea, South Korea. He was here in America working for us here in our office. And he grew up in a culture in South Korea, and he went into the military in South Korea before he came to the United States. And in South Korean culture, men are never allowed to quit, according to him. The problem was he was our head web developer, and he was struggling on some projects. Time deadlines were missed. I mean, every time we offered something to help him, he kept saying, "No, I got it." And then we started noticing how many times he was in the office after hours. And I am okay with wanting to get your job done and wanting to be a little overzealous, but I'm also not Elon Musk. This ain't Twitter. Like, I'm not saying you work a minimum of 40 to get the job done. I want you to have some sense of balance. And it just looked weird that he kept coming in after hours. He was coming in. And I said, something's off with this. Well, eventually, my partner and I at the time, we chose to lay him off and go a different direction. And let me tell you what he said, Christina. It was the most fascinating thing I'd ever heard. There was this sense of relief when we let him, when we had the conversation that we were going to move on. It was puzzling. His face changed, his body posture changed. It was like all of the stress and emotion that he had been holding on to because of his cultural paradigm. We released him of his cultural paradigm because he would have never quit.
You basically
He,
saved him.
huh? I'm sorry.
You basically saved him.
We saved his life. It was, and I saw him later, about 8 months later, and he told us in the meeting before we left that day, he told us the story about the Korean military and culture. And it just, so it wasn't wrong. It was what he believed and what he was taught to believe, but we had to move away, and it was just interesting. So that first question goes, or that first set of interview questions, and why would I want to be comfortable with somebody at my house? Well, I want to know if I can trust them right from the get-go, to be honest. Could I trust them with my grandkids? It may be, this isn't the way you run a 500, 1,000 person company. I don't have a 500,000 person company. So I can't speak to that if this test works that way. But I believe every corporation has a culture that they want to hold up to, and they've got to figure out what defines how they hire into the culture. And for me, because we are a small business, it was my partner and I for many years. Now it's just me, and it's just what I do. It's maybe a little weird, but if I can get through that, I can help you figure out everything else. I can help you figure out everything in digital. We all have to get better at digital. It changes every day. I can't make you get better as a human. I can't make you have more integrity. I can't make you be honest. So that's my position from a leadership perspective, is try to get that right at the door. If they can't do the job after that, that's a different conversation. But I've never hired a bad human. And by the way, this gentleman wasn't a bad human. We ultimately figured out that it was a belief system that carried him through those 3 months that just, sure, it cost us some time and money and what have you, and he could have probably had a better fit. I mean, anyway, that's kind of how that situation played out in real world.
I mean, no matter how many things you're knowing, you will have this kind of situations. And it's so good to just pinpoint this, especially now that many companies went remote. And you said that COVID again changed your company structure and a lot. So I was a pioneer in this remote 9 year plus, and I also helped the companies to establish processes for remote scenarios and also having remote workers. In this way, I was a little bit lucky when COVID hit, so I was very on high demand. But also what I've noticed this here is that the communication structure needs to change. That's one of the first things a remote company or a company that goes remote and changes from on-site to remote needs to take in consideration, because communication through a remote setting like what we have now, you and I, is completely different from being present and just sitting next to each other,
100%.
especially through email and everything you have at a distance. And there are infinite debates about what's the best and if you can have a real company, successful company remotely. Absolutely, yes. It's again back to knowing your humans, knowing how to fructify what they have, their gifts. And if you are hiring based on gifts and assets and what they love to do and they are good at, now on that same spectrum, you don't, if you want to have a motivated employee, you don't put the question, how do I motivate my employee or make it to be more ambitious, driven, and so forth. You hire a motivated person and align the job and the task with his or her inner passions and
Yes.
skills. So this is something that brings us to common sense. What you said today in our podcast, Daryl, is basically related to common sense. We should use our common sense. We should just instinctively know, okay, do I like this person? I need to have three interviews, okay, to truly understand and feel that person, not just once,
Right.
but twice and third time. And then imagine if it would come to my house, I would feel comfortable next to that person and I would feel safe, or I could leave that person in my house and I would just go to the neighbor house. So these kind of scenarios are very welcome. And but many times people don't do it, or corporate, where it went wrong, it was because also they didn't manage to consider evolutionary psychology and anthropology when they created that kind of huge infrastructure and everyone should just align. If you consider tribes and how we evolved, the tribe base would work much better because in that instance, even if you have a 1,000 sized company, you can create smaller tribes inside where you have more leaders who will know exactly like you with your employees, and you discovered in a couple of months, so that's okay. Some companies keep such employees for 2, 3 years until they kill themselves because they just cannot take the pressure anymore. You saw that something is wrong. But in a big size companies, if you don't have this tribe type of functionalities, you won't know, or you don't encourage best friends in the company or close niche groups that are not more than, depends how many times they meet, 12 or 50 and so forth. You can create a mix, but never just leave a huge number of people unsupervised at the personal level and not knowing them. Yeah. I just love what you're saying, really, everything you're saying. I would switch a little bit though now to your business because you are in internet marketing and you served successfully many companies, bringing 300 million, I believe now it's much more, 300 million in revenue, dollars in revenue. And I would want to understand, because you're focusing also on customer acquisition, traction, money. So that's very, very important for most of the startups and every business, basically. What is your secret sauce? What are you doing so well? What did you discover that it counts?
Yeah, great question. And the secret sauce really comes into a philosophy I call scale down to scale up. Now, what do I mean by that? Listen, at the end of the day, our digital marketing agency does all of the same things that every other digital marketing agency does, right? So the secret sauce, you could say, is the people I've hired, maybe. You could say perhaps it's a special technique that we've used on Facebook ads or Google ads. Doubt it. The philosophy has to do with, and I use an analogy for world-class cooking. I'm a big fan of cooking and fine dining. It's one of my things I do when I'm, swear I spend my money when I'm out of work. I don't buy fancy watches and cars. I love to eat out and travel. So I'll spend inordinately amounts of money on dinners, but I'm fascinated by culinary excellence. And what I mean by that is, how is it that one meal can cost $150 and the same quote unquote items show up on another meal and it's $12.99? And I realized that they had the same access to the ingredients, but something in the recipe changed. Yeah. And so for us, it's the recipe. Our recipe has to do with taking our clients from wherever they are. So if they're already moving at a fast pace and they're on a growth curve, we look at the minimum viable process, the minimum viable person, meaning buyer persona or customer. We try to get down and say, who's the only buyer that we should be talking to right now in this campaign, not all 13 of them, where do they live online? What problem do they want to solve? Not problems, not platforms, like where are they most available and accessible? What problems do they want to solve? What problem? What mechanism will they actually use when they go on the journey to solve it? Let's make sure we show up there, not everywhere. So we don't do sometimes campaigns across, I mean, we touch all the platforms eventually, but we try to scale things down. So we build a minimum, what I call an MVP, which, right, everyone in the startup world knows what an MVP is. Startup, Eric Ries, I apologize if I misspelled the name. But I've had that philosophy for 22 years because I've always started businesses without venture funding and without big bank rolls of capital where we could just plow endless dollars into all of the places we could be, whether it was online or offline. So I think one of our secrets is simply sitting down with the customer and really evaluating where do your profits come the fastest? See, we ask a distinction. Where do your customers come that provides you the most profit? Because here's the thing. You and I both know that it takes a while to really build a search engine presence. If you're trying to grow SEO and traffic to your website, that just doesn't happen overnight. But the customer, the owner, the founder, the principal, they want a return on investment in their investment in marketing. So what we try to do is cut that curve as fast as we can so that we can prove, hate to say it, but proof of concept. And then we start to expand up and cross into other channels, other products, other services, other buyer personas that they're trying to serve. And so we look for the highest, potentially the highest profit margin product that we can find or service that they're offering. We try to figure out who buys that, like who buys it. Don't tell me about five people who buys it. Who buys it the most, right? And then from there, we go to the platform of choice and figure out where do we have access to the person who has that problem the most? And then we go there. In my industry, in most companies we work with, it is going to be almost always Google Ads. And the reason for that is Google Ads helps us inform our search engine strategy based on the fact that we can take a company that had not been doing ads or had not been doing ads properly. We can get them obviously placed in front of those search queries. And we have a specific keyword process called the P3 formula, which I won't really break down here because it's a little complicated, but a specific way we look at the buyer's journey. I mean, if you want me to break it down, I can. So we look at the buyer's journey. So we know who the person is. We know what problem they want to solve. Then we realize, oh, how will they go about searching for the solution? And so what we do, even with smaller competitors against bigger competitors, is we bid under the radar. We essentially bid in the blue ocean. So most of the keywords that a lot of people go after are in the red ocean. They get searched 20,000 times a month. They get searched 15,000 times per month. We go find the keywords that are in the blue ocean, where some of the average competitors aren't bidding on, but what matched the buyer's journey. Christina, let me give you a perfect example. If someone ultimately is going to get divorced in a marriage, and they might need a divorce attorney to help them resolve that issue, the relationship's going to break up, which in America, not sure about Romania, but in America, that happens a lot. When the incidents start happening that might lead one spouse or the other to believe that a divorce is possible or they're considering it, it isn't always important that they talk to an attorney today. But if you go to most attorney websites, the only thing available is book a free consultation or book a consultation to discuss your situation. And what we say is it's the wrong offer for their stage of the journey. Let me put it to you in English. I eat a lot. I just said that. I walk out of Carver Steak, which is in Resorts World here in Vegas. I just walked out of Carver Steak, an amazing dinner, steak dinner, amazing. And here comes one of the finest chefs of Italian cuisine walking up to me and says, "Hey, Daryl and Ashley, my wife, I've got a table all set up for you over here at my restaurant. why don't you come join me this evening? Wrong timing for the invitation because I just ate, right? So free consultations on a website, in this example, for a divorce attorney, is generally the only invitation that they make to their prospective customer. But guess what? Nobody wakes up today and gets divorced tomorrow. That's not the way that works. But what the person is thinking when they are thinking about potentially the divorce is they're Googling things like, will I owe spousal support? What about custody of the kids? What about how do we split the house? How do we split the car? Do I get the ring back? I mean, you'd be surprised that these are real search queries. And who on God's green earth would ever search those queries? Someone who could potentially be a primary customer for this customer. But when they're searching those questions, they're not interested in booking a meeting. And so where people go wrong with digital is they only place the invitation for the bottom of the funnel offer and wonder why people don't convert.
Yeah,
So
I
we
just
go.
need to add here a little bit because, again, you're bringing psychology here this time. I mean, really, this is common sense we don't use in business. How awesome what you just pinpointed. Anyone who is just thinking about that divorce is creating a momentum, building a momentum, see what should happen, what could happen. And this can take months, years in some cases. And you're
100%.
so right that they don't want a consultation. That would be like, okay, I decided that I want a divorce, and that's just threatening. And so it could be even a trauma for a person, you know, at the beginning, in the first stages by ideation, when they are just thinking about it. Yeah, awesome.
So we honor the buyer's journey, and it's hard to explain through a blog. But we honor the buyer's journey. So we approach our Google ads and our search engine optimization strategies and everything we do with content across. And by the way, this content does make it over to social media and all the things, but we approach it making sure we've touched all three parts of the journey, the awareness stage, the consideration stage, and the decision stage. And while those three stages are known to most marketers, most people don't honor the buyer in that seat. And there's a question that we solve for when we first meet a customer. And it is, let's imagine your customer is awake at 11 o'clock at night and they would like to be asleep. And they are experiencing the problem that could lead to your solution, to lead to them making it to your office, to discuss something with you. What is keeping them awake? They would like to be asleep, but they're awake. And we start asking the business. Now, by the way, our keyword research can figure out some of that stuff, but we want to hear from the business experientially. What are you being asked from your most primary customers who are obviously profitable and close the fastest? And we just start documenting 10, 15, 20 questions. And then our work starts there. We don't write a blog post until we understand these questions. We don't do any of it until we understand the psychology behind the buyer's journey. And from that, it then leads us to figure out, can I just give you one more real example for how this played out for an attorney? I'm sticking to the attorney because
Sure,
it's something that I
sure.
think a lot of people can understand. So,
Yeah.
divorce attorney. So I met this divorce attorney in 2016, and he's like, Daryl, I'm 30 years practicing divorce attorney, and I never want to go to court again if I don't have to. I'm over it. I'd like to retire in the next 10 years, and I just want to get something in my business where I'm only working with people who have agreed on what they're going to do to separate. They've agreed on the kids, they've agreed on the property. It's called an uncontested divorce here in the United States, not an annulment or the other thing. But it's like this is amicable. Our relationship is over. And somehow the few that can figure it out together, they figured it out and they just need the paperwork filed. There's a small set of attorney fees, et cetera. But the divorce could be done in $800 versus a contested divorce, which could go tens of thousands, right? I was like, Bruce, I don't know if there's a market for that, but let's find out. I'm going to tell you the full story. Bruce hired us for Google Ads because, of course, we start with Google Ads. We then approach the SEO. And within 12 months, he was able to turn off the SEO because we don't want people doing SEO for life, especially in a local business, because there's only so many keywords that are necessary in his genre. So we did it aggressively for 12 months. We stopped. By the way, I lost revenue because we did so well. Let me be clear, because when he canceled the SEO service, that was the large part of the retainer. And he continued doing the ads. He still gets 30 leads a month in the local market, and he only pays us. I'm afraid to even tell you, because no, by the way, if you're listening and you call me, you can never pay this price because it's a 7-year-old, 6-year-old price now. He's been such a great customer. We've never raised his price. But he gets 30 leads a month, and he invests $1,500 a month in ads. No. $750 in ads. $750 for us, I think. So $1,500 a month. He gets 30 leads a month.
And can I ask about the keywords you are using for the SEO?
Well, so yeah. So remember, he wanted to rank for. He wanted to get cases that had nothing to do with going to court. So it was words like uncontested divorce. I just can't think of them all off the top of my head. There were several, but here's what was interesting. The reason why it worked so fast is because while all of the divorce attorneys could do that, they didn't. They get paid a lot more for the contested divorces. So essentially, it was blue ocean. It's blue ocean in almost every city that we approach.
And you
Everywhere.
discovered that there were many, many search terms, but there
Again,
was,
yeah,
yeah,
nobody was
not
there.
many.
Nobody
Awesome.
was there. Now, I mean, the Google put web pages there, but nobody was speaking to the problem. See, here's what the uncontested customer doesn't want to do. They don't want to pay the high fee. So low-cost divorce attorney, cheap divorce attorney, uncontested divorce. I mean, these are all some of the keywords that we pulled out of this. And then we wrote the content accordingly. We, of course, optimized the page like we know how to do with right keywords and the right content. We then ran the ads, of course. And here's what the magic is. Once Google found that he was so relevant for that topic in divorce, see, uncontested divorce is just a sub niche of the overall topic divorce. He ended up ranking number one for divorce attorney, which was the most competitive keyword, and we never tried targeting it because of relevance. Most people don't understand with
Exactly,
Google,
relevance.
it's relevance, right?
That's the
Google
word.
saw so much traffic coming to uncontested divorce. They're like, oh, this guy must be a divorce attorney. Let's rank him for that too. So we take the path of least resistance with a lot of our clients. Here's a one that's kind of interesting. Everyone has plumbing in their house. Everyone's probably experienced things with plumbing, having plumbing problems. We took a plumbing a company, kind of a young plumbing company, 2 years old, didn't have a budget to compete in ads. The plumbing keywords are just super expensive in the United States. There's just a lot of trades that are very expensive in ads, but they didn't have a lot to work with. So we took our philosophy and we said, okay, what's your highest ticket service? It was hot water heater repair. So hot water heaters that go out, and now you can't take a hot shower, you can't get hot water in the house. It's an emergency, and it's a pricey fix, and they make good profit on it. So we're like, okay, great. So we did run the ads. It was expensive, but we also said, okay, what are all the symptoms potentially of the hot water heater going out that the homeowner may notice, but not know that it might lead to the hot water heater going out? It turned out that the game-changing discovery was if you get in the shower in the morning and you go to take a shower and the hot water that you thought was going to get hot doesn't get hot, but you don't know exactly why it doesn't get hot, you're going to go to Google and type, no hot water in the shower. Why is that? That one phrase got 2,000 searches a month. And obviously, a lot of those searches were not in the market where they were, but they were number one for that page. That page, by the way, if you Google it, is still on the first page of Google. I think it's now fallen to page 8 or 9. We wrote that page in 2013, and we stopped working with them in 2016 as they were doing some other stuff. But this was a long breakdown. I hope you don't mind the tactical ideas, but our difference is we just approach the recipe differently.
Laser focus and know your customer. I really appreciate all of these examples because these are valuable, and my listeners, for sure, they will value this as entrepreneurs and founders, CEOs. I mean, this is a full training what you provided today
Yeah.
with the examples. I'm curious, who is your perfect ideal client?
My ideal client, we haven't landed yet in our 12 years.
Okay, then.
No,
Say it here. Maybe it will come from this podcast. You never know.
it's interesting because what you might want to hear that I say we focus on companies that are 2 million to 50 million, which is true. You might really $1 million and up is really where our customer base lies. We actually stay away from enterprise companies. It's not our sweet spot. We're looking for companies that are A, they have a growth metric that they want to achieve. They recognize the power of the internet and they agree on four things. They don't seem to have a good strategy. What they've been doing isn't working. Number two, they don't have enough time to execute it. Number three, they don't have the right skills, either in-house or themselves, to execute it. And number four, they've been doing it and haven't quite seen the ROI that they believe is there, but they haven't been able to unlock. So I don't sell SEO, I don't sell PPC, I don't sell Google Ads, I don't sell email marketing and workflows and HubSpot, and I don't sell all that stuff. I sell, do you believe in these four things? If you don't believe in these four things, we're the wrong company for you. Because it doesn't matter what the tactic is. If you don't believe you're short on strategy, if you think you have enough time and skill and all that stuff, and it isn't always all four, but we're looking for that in our discovery meetings. And are they really committed to the fact that they need the internet and social media to make their business run? You and I both know, Christina, there are tons of companies who are crushing it. They're not marketing online. I sit in a mastermind with at least 13 of them. They're making 25 million, 30 million. Internet's not even a part of their business model. So we're only looking for people that believe that the internet's going to help them scale their business and they need to know how.
Okay, now at the end, I would love to provoke you to give your best tip to the following company, a startup, and a startup that doesn't want to raise a lot of money. You were mentioning that you also bootstrapped your companies before, so you're probably a fan of this type of company. So someone who wants to build a solid company without taking too much money from the investors, they bootstrapped a lot, they don't have enough cash anymore for marketing. Now they have a product and they need to start selling, but they don't have the finances for this, and they need to have a killer strategy, internet strategy, to put themselves out there and just start the customer acquisition journey. And let's say in a couple of months to truly start bring some money into the bank. What would you do with such a company?
I have such a company that just reached out to us 6 months ago. So I'll tell you what we did.
Perfect.
Software company. And same everything you said. A small amount of capital, not huge, but got a small investment, but nothing big. And so the thing goes back to what we said before. Who is the most likely person to be already using a competitor's product that looks like yours? So I'm assuming we're not creating a brand new product to the world that no one's ever seen before, because we're trying to find. I don't take companies like that, by the way. It's not my skill. My skill is not to convince a market to use something that's never been here. It's maybe to get a buyer to transition from what they've always done. But the strategy worked like this. We can't just say what everybody else is saying. Take my free trial on the software, right? Promote my live event. It was a live event software. So what we did was we interviewed the founders and did a founder's interview story. And we asked them through keyword research all of the same questions we would have written a blog post for, but that they don't have the money to pay for right now because they don't have the money for SEO right now. So we took all of the questions that you would have heard me talk about earlier. We did the keyword research around the blue ocean content topics that weren't sign up for live streaming software. We asked them the questions about why they built the company, why they built the product, what the problem the creators solution. I mean, we asked all the questions. We then took our video team, chopped it all up, and we provided that to them for them to start sharing on their social media and running what we call brand awareness ad campaigns tied to lead generation campaigns. And you can combine those for essentially, I mean, you do need a little budget, so we can't say no budget. But the brand awareness campaigns run around $500 to $1,000 a month. And when I say brand awareness, think radio, billboard, TV. But because of the power of social media ads, we can do some very narrow targeting such that we're hoping to get the ads only in front of people who are customers of products like them. So I can say it without saying it, but one of their competitors is Vimeo. Vimeo, web hosting platform, blah, blah, blah. So we targeted the customers following Vimeo on all the social media pages. So part of that is we're trying to borrow the audience of another industry leader to get them aware that we've got a competing product. We're not calling out Vimeo in the ad. We're not calling them out. Another competitor that has a similar functionality was Eventbrite, the ticketing platform. Well, so we follow, so we target the customers or followers of those brands, and those are going to be small groups of people. Let me be clear. You're not advertising to millions of people. So we niche down the ads so that we can A, conserve the budget and try to get the message in front of the right people. And then, of course, we recommend outreach. And we don't do outreach in our agency. So we gave them the outreach strategy, which means you're going to have to do some mano-a-mano, right? You're going to have to get out and start interacting with people on LinkedIn, because there's just no option. Everything online costs dollars. And so if you don't have time to do it, going direct. So
And so this was a video strategy, right?
it was. It's the cheapest way to get in front of an audience.
And
Today,
very effective.
video. Yeah, it's the cheapest way to do it. Like, we do it for local businesses. The lawyer example, we do it for restaurants. And it goes, in this case, it was a national audience. They're not ready to sell internationally yet. And but again, it comes down to how do you narrow your targeting? So if you got a big budget, you can go broad. But when you don't have a big budget, you got to go really narrow. Like, you got to get real tight and then expand out once you see performance. Why do we love video? Because it's one of the only mediums and media where you can get measurement. As you probably know, you can get measurement on pull through on the consumption. You see, you think about a billboard or a radio or a TV ad, you don't get pull through metrics, right? So when I put up a cold video in front of a perfect stranger who doesn't know this brand, and we can say, oh, this video is 1 minute and 44 seconds, and we're getting 2%, which is our threshold. That's our goal threshold. We're getting 2% of people to watch. So we'll put up four pieces of content, let's say, that are video, and we'll keep them all between 1 minute and 2 minutes. Why do we do that? Well, because I don't want to test engagement on 6 second, 12 second, 30 second videos that don't tell me nothing. Can I get a perfect stranger to consume this content? And this is not an ad to go sign up for the platform. It's more of the backstory of the founder, the problem that the creators face. What is the problem that it solves? If we can get pull through at 2% on video traffic, then we believe that we're getting closer to who could potentially be the customer. And we can do that and let those videos kind of move their way through Facebook, Instagram. We'll use YouTube from time to time. LinkedIn's not the best place for us to test that strategy. And neither is like a Twitter or Snapchat, but primarily Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn will be in there for the big B2B type of scenarios. Then once we do that, we map in our retargeting strategy and get a little bit more laser focused on lead gen.
I do agree with this, and I promoted the same strategy, video. I believe it's the best way today, and I favor YouTube ads if you do ads. But any type of video gives you not just the awesome statistics, but it brings the right people to you because they can see your face, and there's nothing more
100%.
magical to than attract the right type of clients. You don't want to attract everyone, and if they don't like your face, they don't like your accent, your voice, or whatever, you don't want to work
Let's
with
get it
them
out of the way
anyway.
right now. Let's
Yes,
get it out of the way right now.
correct. Okay.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say about video, and this is what most people struggle with, and it's video creation technically is hard. And so that's what we had to figure out, because we couldn't get our founders and CEOs, and we couldn't get them to do the videos themselves. So we had to actually create a process internally such that we can create it in a more fluid way. And it's very much what we're doing right now, Christina. We simply interview our clients virtually through our virtual studio, and it makes them so comfortable. And we send them the equipment. They don't even have to do anything. They just have to show up for an hour, and then they just answer questions on their expertise anyway. And then we take over and take it all from there, because trying to get them to do it by themselves, giving them the script, and it didn't just never work, because they wouldn't do it. They were afraid. They'd rather jump out of an airplane without a parachute than public speak in front of a video camera knowing it's going to go somewhere, but when you kind of direct them through the
Yeah, you
video,
guide them.
yeah, they just loosen right up and they're like, oh, this wasn't as bad as I thought. And the reality is Google cares about the experience of the website and the blog and the content creator in SEO. So we're
Yeah.
killing two birds with one stone, right? So we're not just doing the ad side of it and the video side of it and the brand side of it, but now we're getting ready for Google, who is big on expertise, authority, trust, and now they've added experience to their overall search ranking model. And so, like I said, this game is moving all the time, but the goal is the same. Do they know who we are? Do they believe we can help them? And can we stay in front of them long enough until when they need us, we show up? Because that's what a lot of marketers do. They show up one day, get a click. They get 1,000 clicks and like, oh, we didn't get that many purchases. Then they turn the campaign off. But they forget the buyer's journey. If it's a divorce attorney, it could be 12 months.
Yeah, great
What are you going
final
to?
message. Just know your client well and go personal. I mean, wow, this was a long discussion. We have 1 hour. I cannot believe this, and I
Went
didn't
fast.
even, yeah, and didn't thought about the direction our discussion will go, but it's so fascinating.
I
Before
appreciate the
my
discussion.
me also, I believe that maybe we should do a second part some time, maybe in the second part of this year, and see where we are and what new discoveries you have with your new campaigns. I really appreciate your examples. Thank you for that. They are really
Thank you.
helpful. This is what I expect from my guest, especially to bring value, and you brought ton of value. So thank you again.
Thank you.
And
Thank you so much for having me.
before our my last questions that are a little bit different from business, please tell my audience where they can find you.
Oh, thank you, Christine. I appreciate the opportunity. The easiest way to find me is right where you're listening to Christina's show in whatever platform or player you're listening. Look up the Mind Shift podcast with Daryl Evans. That's me. And you can listen to my show and check it out and see if some of the thinking that you hear there and some of the guests that we have interviewed there inspire you. That would be the first place. And the second place is darylevans.net.
Very original presentation. I might borrow this. Okay, so at the end, we will finish with the favorite topic, going personal. So let's see a little bit, Daryl, the personal side of yours. I already know that you are a foodie, you like cooking and refined foods and so forth. So please share your favorite meal or recipe.
Oh my, I just made one of them last night. I have a lot of them. One of my favorites is a dish called pan roast. It's called a couple things, but it's called oyster pan roast. When I first had it, it was at the Station Casinos here in Las Vegas. And it is a very rich soup or bisque. Think lobster bisque if you've ever heard or seen that. It's got a lobster bisque consistency, and the variation is, I mean, it's a lot of ingredients to make the richness of this broth. I'm actually going to eat some leftovers as soon as we're done. It is one of my favorite recipes. And so I had it at a restaurant when a friend took me there, and I was like, oh my geez, I have to figure out how to make this. This was back in 2003. And it happens that I make it. We only eat it in the winter because it's obviously a soup. It's a shrimp soup. You can do it with crab. You can do it with any seafood that you like. We like it here with shrimp and crab. Some people even put in some sort of sausage sometimes, but that changes the flavor quite a bit. It's simple to prepare. It tastes better the second day than the day you pull it off the stove because the flavor just sits. It's
Okay.
amazing. And it doesn't take long because we cook short meals after dinner, after both of us work and we got a family with grandkids come through. So we always are, these are quick meals. So it's a shrimp pan roast or oyster pan roast with shrimp. That's the technical name of it.
Interesting. I might try that because I love shrimps and seafood
I'll
in
send you the
general.
recipe so you get the right one.
Okay, then I could.
Because the internet has a bunch of them.
Oh, and I will add the link to this podcast for those who are also curious about us. Any other hobbies others don't know about you?
I'm a voracious reader and learner, but that's probably not uncommon to your listeners who are leaders. Hobbies, I think
Something
of
you
some of my,
love a lot,
yeah.
but you didn't have the chance to practice for a long time.
Okay, that's golf. I golf is the number one hobby that I have not played a lot of in the last couple of years for sure. Golf is clearly the that's the one.
Why?
That's a great question. I had a feeling that was going to be the follow-up. Not prioritizing it in my schedule.
Okay.
It's
Thank you.
just not prioritizing it. I used to play quite a bit, and over the years it's been less and less and less and less and less. And just not making it a priority, but I love it every time I play it. And so
So
it's
golf brings you joy, makes you happy. Then I would say in January, today after this podcast, before eating your leftover, to set up at least 2 days for this year to go golfing.
thank you, Coach. I'm gonna do that. I literally just finished my 2023. I don't do resolutions, but it's my year ahead plan, and it's definitely on there. So, but you're right.
Awesome.
I should just stop and put two on there because it's not hard to put two on
You have
there.
time, you know, it's just the beginning of the year. You can do some edits there.
That's
I'm
right.
doing also some.
I like it. Thank you for that one.
You're welcome. My last question, and this is now my final question I want to ask all of my guests. And so maybe you know it, probably maybe you don't, but I'm really curious in your answer. So I am your godmother or fairy or whatever, or your genie. And I give you all the money and influence in the world. What would you do with them?
I would, he gave me all the money in the world so I could make up a number.
All the money you want in the world plus influence. So this
Plus
combo.
influence. Yeah. So my passion is hunger. I would make sure that money got distributed if it did make sense. Like I love to eat. I've never missed a meal in my day. It wasn't that I didn't grow up rich or anything like that. Very modest growth, family growing up. But I'm amazed at the numbers of starvation and in my own city and in the country as well as around the world. That money would go to water and food, which makes no sense that we have places, more places than we can imagine on this planet that people don't even know where their next meal is coming from. I learned about the phrase, I think it's meal poverty, or it's simply it's not about starving. It's about the number of people, specifically kids, that don't know where their next meal is coming from. And it's just a fascinating number. In my neighborhood where I live, by the way, it's not like I live in Bel Air or something like that. 13% of kids in my neighborhood, in my zip code, in my country, don't know where their next meal is coming from. And I found that out from doing some work with Three Square, which is the local food bank here, which is part of, Feeding America. And that was an eye opener that not just here in
13.
my city. Food insecure. That's the word. Food insecure, which means they don't know where their next meal is coming from. And so when I toured their facility and started giving to them, it just was unbelievable that there was that.
13% in Las Vegas,
No, no,
near
no.
you.
13% in my zip code. It's
Oh.
28% in some areas of the city. It's a various. I got a
And your zip code,
detail.
I would presume it's okay. It's okay-ish, right? Not
I would have presumed it was 3% because I live in a decent area.
Oh, okay.
I would have presumed it would have been damn near none. So that's my point. I live in a good area. I mean, I've been doing well. Right? I would have presumed it was zero or close to zero.
Yeah,
And
this
it was
is a very
13%.
interesting question to
And that
just
struck
face.
me. And it was the idea of food insecurity. And I didn't. And when I got the definition of that, and I was talking to the director over there, and I went and toured. I took my daughter at the time because she was, my daughter, great daughter, don't get me wrong, but she's going through a little bit of, when we do well, our kids see things we didn't get to see, and they take sometimes things for granted. And so we went over there and packed lunches, and we packed Friday backpacks because if they didn't get a backpack, they wouldn't eat over the weekend. And here's the problem. The backpack had to be shared with two or three other kids in the house. So they got a backpack for themselves. And what we would find out is that the backpack would still have to be shared with three people. So we went and packed those and did that work for a little while. And it just has never left my mind. It's just that's here. And we already hear the stories from around the world. And that's here. And I'm like, oh, this is unbelievable. So That'd be where I do it. That's what I would make sure 10% of it took care of my family for the rest of my life or rest of their lives. And then I would take care of, make sure people eat. It's a weird scenario for me.
Yeah, talking trauma at kids at this early age to have this kind of survival preoccupation that will I eat when, from who, from where? It's just absolutely crazy. Yeah, indeed. Thanks for sharing. And yeah, for raising a very, very important thing. I never thought about this. Now, what would be the percentage around my area, you know, and everyone, all the listeners now just thinking about this, that this problem exists in a good neighborhood. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to look at the stuff on the news and say, oh, that's them. It was right here in our backyard. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so it's interesting. No child, especially, should have to face that. They're trying to grow up.
Indeed.
And so, yeah.
Yeah.
But Christine, I want to say this too before we re conclude. You've been an amazing host. Very thought-provoking questions. Thank you for being such an amazing host and allowing me some time and holding space for this conversation. It's been absolutely a pleasure.
Thank you, Dara. This is what I wanted to share as well with you because this was a pleasure. And I was right at the beginning. We share
You
so many
were.
commonalities. My God, it's like you're my brother or something. Yeah. So I am looking forward to have you back on my show. Yeah.
They say great minds think alike, and the longer I've been in business, the more I realize that good leadership principles and good philosophy is not just what we see on the surface of what I call superficial knowledge. It's the people that are willing to go deeper and do the deeper work, right? I don't have a background in psychology. I heard you say you studied human nature, and we're curious about deeper levels of understanding. And I've noticed that now in my journey. And so again, I'm super excited that we cross paths. And by all means, in fact, would love to have you on my show because I'm sure there's things I would be able to unpack for our guests from your wisdom and your background, from a completely different light. And so that invitation is open.
And I will come with pleasure. Have a wonderful year in front of you, Daryl, and we see each other soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Christina.
Until the next time.
Subscribe to Christina's podcast and stay connected through her social media channels too.